Prime Minister Scott Morrison says China should lose its classification as a developing nation in recognition of Beijing's economic maturity. The Prime Minister made the comments during a speech in Chicago overnight, where he outlined his speech to the approach to the changing global order, calling for reform of the world trading system.
China's economic growth is welcomed by Australia, and we recognise the economic maturity that it has now realised as a newly developed economy. This was the point of the world's economic engagement with China. Having achieved this status, it is important that China's trade arrangements and participation in addressing important global environmental challenges, all of this needs to reflect this new status and the responsibilities that go with it as a very major world power.
That's Scott Morrison speaking in Chicago overnight. The Prime Minister has also backed US President Donald Trump's push for a complete deal instead of any partial deal to resolve the trade war. Michael Shoebridge is a Director of Defence and Strategy at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, also known as ASPI. Welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks very much, Hamish.
Do you agree with the Prime Minister? Is China no longer a developing nation?
Yes, I think he's right, and he's in very good company there with most of the G20 leaders and treasurers, probably except for China and Donald Trump. China is well known for having market-distorting state policies on things like intellectual property theft, forced technology transfer, and protection of their home industries. So these are large market distortions that many international economies are suffering from.
Can we just, though, explain what the difference would be between being a newly developed and a developing economy? Because it's clearly something that China contests. Where's the delineation?
Well, the delineation is in the kind of targets and commitments that you have to meet under things like WTO rules and any big international agreement now that has economic implications, like the Paris Climate Change Treaty, for example. So you get more free passes if you are a developing country because you've got so much room to make up economically. So you get lower emission targets, you get more flexibility around subsidising your home industry, and which gives you a competitive advantage. But as you become more developed, the rules become stricter and they start to look more like the rules that the US and Australia have to live under.
But China, though, would argue, well, we're still lifting tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. We need those concessions to give us the opportunity to do that. Are they wrong?
Well, unfortunately, they're acting like they have a two-track economy. They have a very highly developed, high-technology, export-orientated sector, with, you know, some of the big technology companies like Alibaba, Tencent, and of course Huawei. And then, as you say, they've still got hundreds of millions of people living in poverty, but that's not the focus of these particular economic policies that are at issue.
But their defence is correct in a sense.
Well, yes, but there's another aspect, which is that they're trying to do two things at the one time. Say, on climate change, for example, President Xi is trying to move quickly on emissions reduction, but his pursuit of his high economic growth targets to keep the Communist Party's legitimacy is working in the other direction. So their emissions are rising and they're building lots of coal-fired power stations.
I think China is committed to building something like 300 more coal-fired power stations. At the same time, developing countries are at this UN Climate Action Summit in New York, asking developed nations to help provide the funding for them to transition away from that. Is that the sort of thing that Scott Morrison, for example, might have a problem with?
Well, I think Scott Morrison and Xi Jinping are both experiencing the effects of the collapse of boundaries between governments, foreign and domestic policies. And climate change is the biggest example of this. I mean, we saw this at the recent Pacific Island Forum, where Scott Morrison gave quite a big package around renewables and climate change mitigation to South Pacific countries, about $500 million worth of stuff. But he got an enormous amount of criticism for not squaring the circle with Australia's domestic climate change policies. And I think Xi Jinping has exactly the same problem on a much larger scale.
Obviously, Scott Morrison and others are calling for China to accept more responsibility that comes alongside being a major power. Isn't there an inherent problem here in that the West, Australia included, may want China to take more responsibility, but probably along with that, China will want to be more ambitious, will want to seek to have more influence in regions like the Pacific? Are we trying to have it both ways?
Well, I think we already see a very aggressive, assertive China that's wanting to have more influence in places like the South Pacific. So this, if we see more of that, it won't be a lot of new news. But I think Scott Morrison's in very good company with a whole lot of world leaders in wanting these economic reforms. And that's going to be very difficult for President Xi, because these are core Communist Party policies about his drive to push China into global strategic, technological and economic power.
The PM appears to be backing Donald Trump's approach to the trade war with China. He specifically called for action on issues like intellectual property to be part of any deal, and crucially wants a total deal rather than something piecemeal. Do you have an idea of what that looks like?
I think it looks like the kind of reforms that the world leaders discussed at APEC in 2018. And they agreed on a communique about WTO reform, except for one country, and that was China. So it's things like removing the protection for the subsidized national champions, like Huawei, for example. It's stopping the process of insisting that foreign companies operating in China transfer intellectual property to Chinese partners to build them as competitors. And it's applying the same kind of competitive neutrality that you see in other economies, including Australia's.
The Prime Minister has not received an invitation to go and visit China. Do you see this moment as an important turning point for Australia?
No, I think it's a very consistent path that the Australian government has been on. And in fact, this discussion about international trade and economics really does sit well with what Penny Wong has been saying recently, talking about multilateralism, the US-China choice not being binary, and Australia needing to show it's got agency and it can help shape the international debate. So I think this is along that same path.
Foreign Minister Maurice Payne has labelled as deeply disturbing footage believed to show dozens of Uyghur men blindfolded with their hands tied behind their backs at a train station in the northwest of China. It's been verified by one of your colleagues at ASPE. Is Australia, in your view, being forceful enough with China about this sort of thing?
I think we've got to be clear and calm rather than forceful, and we've got to call out gaps between Chinese state words and Chinese state actions. And that's exactly what the verification of this appalling treatment of these Uyghur people, China's own citizens, shows.
Michael Shoebridge, we will have to leave it there. We've got to get to the news at 7 o'clock. We appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much, Hamish.
Michael Shoebridge is Director of Defence and Strategy at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute.